PHP Radio
on the Hackers Paradise Podcast Network,
your number one source for all things golf.
Subscribe on iTunes to never miss an episode.
Hello, you golfing legends, and welcome back to another episode of the original Off Course. I'm your host, Dan Edwards, and joining me this week, it is my pleasure to reintroduce you to Mr. Dean DiCrescenzo. He's a staff writer on THP. He's also a big-time forum member over there on the Hackers Paradise forum. You can find his work on the Hackers Paradise homepage. Dean, welcome back.
Hey, Dan. We're back. We're off to a good start, too. I like it.
I think this might be the easiest part of your day because you've been in new car saga mode for the last, 17 months, it feels like.
It's about right. Yeah.
Yeah. You just need to, if you played on tour, they just hand you cars every week and you could just let them make a deal.
I mean, that's so much easier. It's better than leasing. They just hand them to you. There's no paperwork. You don't have to deal with any of it. It's just here's your Mercedes for the week. Enjoy.
Well, so you're getting a Mercedes. That's exciting.
Yeah, no, that's a little too rich for my blood.
you're more of like a truck, larger SUV kind of guy. I tend to be more of the sedan realm, which much to the disappointment of my wife, but it's always funny rolling up to the dealership and just looking them straight in the eye. I go, hey, can I try and shove my golf clubs in the trunk? Is that all right?
I definitely had some where I took out my moto caddy cart from my truck bed. I was like, I need to put this in here to make sure everything looks okay.
Nice. So,
sadly, we've talked about how I don't clean golf clubs. I also don't clean the wheels of my carts. So they kind of look at this thing that's got all like, the dried grass on it and the dried up dirt and whatever goose crap is on there. And yeah, that's going in. That's going into somebody's new car temporarily.
Oh, man. Well, hopefully this feels more like a vacation than anything else to you, chatting a little bit about golf. And speaking of golf, have you been able to play much at all lately?
I've been able to get out. This past weekend, I played 36 holes at a couple of different courses.
Whoa.
Yeah, man. It's, it's been good. The weekend before that, got out with my little man and my dad. So that was fun. It's the weather has finally turned. If you remember earlier in the year, the weather was just pure garbage.
Mm-hmm. You said rain like every weekend for some ungodly number of straight weekends.
From the middle of November until June.
Jeez. And so it's improved a bit.
Yeah, it's improved. So I've been getting out as much as I can. I've been playing. The more I've been playing, the better I've been playing, which is nice. So you know what that's like. The expectations go up, and then when you don't play as well, you just get more frustrated. So
yeah, and then it all comes crumbling down, right? Yeah,
that's right.
Oh, man. I feel like we've had a lot of conversations like that on THP this year where it's like, what happens when the house of cards comes crumbling down? What happens when I just saw a thread the other day where it's like the best back nine or front nine of my life followed by the worst back nine of my life. Golf is such a fleeting game, man. And I know you play a rather interesting game yourself where you hit a lot of great shots, and then you hit a couple miracle shots, and then some others. I've seen you lace into a couple rounds we've played together. One of my favorite videos on my current phone is you hitting like a miracle flop shot over top of two bunkers in Florida onto the green. And the look of surprise on your face was more than the look of bewilderment on mine. how relatable is that to you to have like the really high and low round, or would you say you're more in line with like the consistent player?
Definitely not the consistent player. Definitely not. Case in point was Saturday. I started off with six straight bogeys on it just wasn't good. It wasn't bad, just some bad putting and whatnot.
Dean, I thought we had the putting solved.
It was a course I haven't played in a few years. It was early in the morning. They were really slow greens. I struggled to adjust. That's what I'm telling myself.
Okay.
And then, turn to the back nine and I hit the first seven or eight greens in regulation.
Whoa.
Yeah. I mean, it was fine. Like all of a sudden the swing was there. I was driving the ball well, I was hitting good irons and I was hitting good putts. They weren't dropping, but they were right around the hole, leaving tap in pars, which is nice. And to the point that I made a post on THP talking about, you know, how comfortable I became with the Elite Mini driver.
Mm.
And someone asked me, hey, you know, that's awesome. I said, yeah, but you know what? The next day I could go out and shoot 100 and just I won't know where it's going. And the next round I went out in the first three tee shots, I forced myself to use the mini driver instead of the driver. And I didn't even come close to hitting the fairway.
Really?
It was as good as it was on Saturday, as bad as it started on Sunday. And
man,
it was a battle. You know, Sunday was, you know, got a bunch of double bogeys early and then mixed in a few birdies, which was really nice, but you're battling at that point. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that anything but consistent.
Okay. Well, at least I didn't paint you into a corner early with my lead in on that one. But I maintain that.
Wait, were you trying to make me sound good or look good at golf?
Because I did when I talked about that bunker shot. I might have to share it at some point with everyone so they can see it.
Oh,
it's a shame I don't have an elite production moment here where I can just shift the video in. But you said about 14 things that'll lead us into 14 different topics, which is generally how this show goes. I'm just going to delete everything that I'm looking at over here on my left. The mini driver conversation.
Yeah.
I kicked up a thread on THP not too long ago. I have been battling driver for 5 years. And here's the most insulting and or upsetting part of it is, you know, they're talking about, hey, I really wish I had a repeatable swing. Like people say, oh, it'd be so nice to have a repeatable swing. Well, I have an incredibly repeatable driver swing. It's just freaking wrong every single time. It's great to the top. And then I shallow it like a psychopath and I'm so low inside that there's only one place to go. And that lasts like quarter of a second. It's over the top and brutal. Yeah. But it's the exact same swing with my one iron. Yes, I said one iron. It's the exact same swing with my seven iron. It's pretty much the same swing as my wedge. So myself and the poor soul over at Golf Tech trying to help me sort this out was like, have you thought about just like really cutting your driver down like a lot? It's like, I feel like that's a band-aid. I understand where you're coming from. But that got me thinking, like, this mini driver concept supports the idea that drivers just doesn't work for everyone. And we've seen it in the past. I wish I wasn't the perfect example of it, but I'm another good example of it. What has you leaning into the mini driver over your driver?
A lot of it for me, the reason it's in the bag is just because I have an empty spot. So the availability to have something there, I do at times struggle with a driver and I get a two-way miss going where I won't shut the face and I'll block everything way right. Or I will come severely over the top and I'll hood that thing and it'll go 60 yards to the left. So I needed something where I could still get some forgiveness out of, as opposed to a three wood. I've always viewed the mini driver more as like a supercharged fairway wood than an actual driver replacement. Just something I want to supplement the tee game with. It's not giving up. I feel like if the instructor said to you, why don't you just cut your driver down 2 inches? Does that make you feel like, man, I should just give up at this point? Just give up with the driver? Like, but as opposed to, here, try this mini driver. It's an inch and a half shorter. It's a smaller head. And you're like, yeah, you know,
that's
what?
That's a totally different thing. Yeah. Why do you think I hit a one iron, dude? It's because the three wood got hard to hit. So I'm like, oh, let's use this tiny little pencil of an iron instead. Like, that makes perfect sense for no one.
By the way, when you started saying you're the same swing with your one iron and then started to say seven iron, before you said iron, I was really hoping you were going to say seven wood, because I was going to ask about your bag, be like, so you go driver, one iron, seven wood. What psycho would do that?
Yeah. Well, they had that, what was it called? The Heavenwood for a while. That had the crazy loft on it, but it was super long.
Yeah.
And I feel like anyone who had that club in the bag was insane too. So
that's me.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I paint you in a corner again.
Forever. It was so easy to hit. The ball would go so high in the air. It was just automatic from, you know, anywhere from 190 to like 215 in my bag. Man. I hit that club.
Yeah, I could never hit it, dude. I never jive with it. It always went. You were looking for that. I was like, terrified of the results I was getting with it. But, you know, that's, I was also the super hybrid guy. So it makes sense. It's like counter to the argument. Well, let's talk about the elephant in the room then. The one that always ends up being a primary point of the conversation when I get you on the podcast. Don't act like you don't know what I'm talking about, dude. What's up with the putter?
Which way do you want to go on this one? No, the putter's been okay. I've settled back in to a the number 7 square to square. Okay. I've got the UST Mamiya All In Proto in it.
Sweet.
And I have a lab grip on it because I like the forward press.
Gross. Okay.
but yeah, no, the putter's been okay. I have struggled to adapt to green speeds
lately. Okay.
You know, I've been playing at different times of the day. I've had some rounds where it's been super fast. I've had some where, you know, there's moisture in the green or coming after some morning rain and it's been really slow. And I don't know about you, but I struggle more adapting to slow speeds than I do to fast speeds because I feel like I'm usually a guy who wants to dive the ball into the hole as it is. You know, I don't really ram it 2 feet by. I try to, you know, just drip it right over the edge. And when it's a slow green, I am constantly like 3 feet short. And then you try to get in your head, hey man, you gotta hit it. You gotta get it there. And that's when you find one that's not as slow and you blast it by like 7 feet and then you miss that and it just gets in your head.
Do you take that well when you get to a course and it's slower than you want it to be? Like, do you put up with it okay? Or do you happen to find yourself making comments throughout the round? Like, oh, come on, man. These are so slow. It's driving me nuts.
No. So usually I play either as a solo or book as play with three random guys. And I don't want them to think I am, you know, 100% a nutcase. So I try to keep that internal.
100%?
yeah.
You want to leave at least a little bit of a question?
You know, there's always a chance I'm going to play with one of those guys again. But I do. I make comments to myself about, not as much about, man, these things are so slow, but come on, man, you can't leave another putt short. You got to get it to the hole. And yeah, I still don't, but
it's really hard. I love putting. I it's one of the things that golf hasn't stolen away from me from a skill set thing. It's usually something I do pretty well. So I enjoy like the trying to solve the greens. And to your point, I think it's a lot harder to adapt to slower greens, like exceptionally slow greens, than it is to adapt to faster greens. Not to say that putting on, you know, ice rinks is an easy thing, but I personally feel like you fall completely out of your rhythm and out of your putting stroke when you have to really ram it at the hole.
Yeah, it feels like for me when I'm on it's always felt like this, when I'm on a really slow green, I feel like I feel like I've got to get quicker in the transition, which is more like my regular swing. And I don't want it to be like my regular swing because my regular swing is terrible. So, you know, I really try to have a real subtle and like soft transition with the putter. And if I'm on slow greens, I feel like I've got to like put more force into it. And I definitely rush it. And that leads to all sorts of things. That's really why, you know, the slow greens bother me, because it like you said, it creeps into your mind. It creeps into your putter stroke. And then, you know, all bets are off.
Yeah.
Even if you make like a 15 footer, you're like, oh, that's awesome. And then you get to the next hole and you leave the next one, you know, 6 or 7 inches short. It's like, come on, man. You forget all about that. You just drained one.
Yeah. I found myself a couple weeks ago playing at a course that I'd sort of built in my mind would be exceptionally fast and challenging. And they ended up being really slow greens, like way slower than I've played for the majority of this year. And I don't want to say it took away from the experience, but I found myself making comments like, what the hell is going on? Like, how does that not even get halfway to the holes? And I'm like, I'm blurting these things out. I have a habit of being pretty vocal about how I feel about things, which is good,
so
bad.
You are the different psycho.
Oh, I am 100% honest and open about things that are going on out there. But for the most part, I'm positive, and it's very reactionary for me. I get it out and we move on. And I said it for like fourth or fifth time. I was like, I think they get it, buddy. Like, I think they know you're not super happy with the pace. So maybe just shut the hell up for the rest of the round about it, which of course I didn't, but I sure tried, Dean. I sure tried.
You know where I get vocal like that? Not with the pace of the greens, but with pace of play.
That drives
me nuts, and that's something that I do get vocal about. I don't care if the people I'm playing with think I'm nuts, but yeah, it's one. I got one for you. Speaking of pace of play,
okay.
So here's a topic that I'm just gonna spring on you. So Saturday morning, I'm playing at Saratoga Spa State Park.
Sounds fancy.
It's an early tee time. I want to say it was like 7:08 maybe on a Saturday morning. And again, I book as a solo, and there's three people already supposed to be in this group. They stroll up a few minutes late, and it's two guys and a lady. And the one guy says to us, "Hey, nice to meet you. Introduce yourself. This is," I can't remember her name, "so-and-so. It's her first time ever playing golf."
Oh.
So how do you react to that? So for me, I'm just like, yeah, you know what? I'm just out here to escape the fam. I'm not worried about it. We'll get you through it if you need me to. I don't know where you are in your game. But how do you react to that? Because instantly you're like, it's not a gender thing. It's just this is the first time person X is ever playing golf. And it's, 7 o'clock Saturday morning when you're hoping to get to the course, get your round done, and, get back to life.
Well, so my first thought is at 7:08 a.m. Like, are you serious right now? There's a time and a place, man. And I'm a father who, for the first number of years that my son was figuring things out, there was no way I was going to take him out in the morning. And in fact, I told him numerous times, like, "Hey, it's a morning tee time. We have pretty strict pace of play at my course. I don't want to go out there and rush him and tell him get off the hole and make him feel like he's having a bad time." I believe those moments are built for afternoon golf. I think the guys who go out in the morning and the women who go out in the morning, they're probably looking to get it done and go on with their day. 7:08 in the morning sets the tone for the entire golf course. And I personally think it's incredibly selfish as a golfer, as someone who's familiar with the game, to take someone out in their first time under that sort of scenario.
First time. It was,
jeez.
I mean, and I, you could tell that, she had been to the driving range. She had hit balls before. Her first drive was really well. I mean, it went down the middle of the fairway. It didn't get high in the air, but it was in the fairway. But you could tell.
Competing with you or what?
Oh, yeah.
Comparing it to your own shot.
every time I outdrove her, I gave her a flex.
Oh, first time, huh?
Yeah, there it is. Here. Look at that one. Good for you. See that one up there? That's mine.
Yeah.
there's just things about learning to play golf that have nothing to do with actually hitting the golf ball or where the golf ball goes. And that's something that the more I kind of observed what was going on, like the waiting to hit, asking if it's your turn to hit, standing on the wrong side of the green, that kind of, not even stuff that's, not even focused on like standing in somebody's line or anything like that, but just the little things that really affect the pace of play. And we got to that point. I think the front nine took like 2.5, 2:40. It was slow. And the back nine was faster. Things got a little
2:40.
Better. 2:40. Yeah.
It was 7:08. So how many groups were in front of you? And
the first
tee
time at that course is 5:50.
My goodness. Did you, were you at any point keeping up with the group in front of you?
I saw them the first three holes because of the way the course is routed. And I don't think I saw them again the rest of the day.
Does the golf course you played have a pace of play expectation?
I always thought that course was 4 hours. On their card now, it says 4.5.
Okay.
With a built-in like 10 minute break at the turn if somebody needs to go in and use the bathroom or get something from the bar.
Have lunch?
Yeah.
Excuse me. Okay. And at
Saratoga,
any point,
it's fancy.
At any point, it's the spa place. Yeah. At any point, did you engage with a ranger or someone from the pro shop? Did no one call behind you? And
nope, nobody called behind us. It didn't seem like we were. That's like the scary thing. didn't seem like we were really holding up the group behind us. You know, the third hole, you have to hit over some water on a par five. And we were really slow at that point, three holes in. And the one guy in the group says, well, you know, if you look at them, they're in the bunker and it looks like there's two guys in the water. So they're going to take some time. We'll be fine. I'm like, oh, man, what if they, you know, what if they know how to hit bunker shots?
That's
then
it's wild, man.
It was wild. It was okay. She had a good time. At least she said she hit some good shots. Here's the wildest thing to me. Two of them, actually. So as a beginner golfer, you don't know what you don't know.
Yeah.
Right. Now, anytime they were on the green, she would just hit a putter. Didn't matter where she was from. She hit some shots that she was putting through like 10, 12 feet of rough onto the green and knocking them within, you know, like 15 feet. And I'm like, man, you know what? She doesn't know that. That's incredible. Anybody who has played golf,
I couldn't do that.
Most of us wouldn't, we wouldn't even attempt that shot.
Of course we wouldn't. Yeah.
We would get the wedge out.
Yeah.
She didn't know any better. So she's just like, I'm going to hit it really hard.
Oh, and, wow.
And I kept saying to her, I was like, wow, that's awesome. Don't, you know, keep that up. That's good.
Oh, how dare you?
The other thing
from the rough, man, was anyway,
it was on the last hole. She hits a good drive and has a shot to the green that she can reach. And, you know, she comes up maybe 20 yards short of the green, chips the next one up, and she's got like an 8-footer for a legit par. Now, she hasn't come close to a par all day. She doesn't understand what a par is. And says, yeah, we pick it up. I'm kind of just good. Like, wait, what?
I'm not good.
I'm like, you don't want to hit that?
She's like, after five hours?
She's like, I'm just done. I'm like, are you serious? You had a chance to make your first legitimate par on a really good golf hole. And yeah, no, I'm good. So, okay.
Wow. Well, that's this is all very tough to swallow. Wild. Overall,
it was wild. I really wanted to make a post on THP about it to see how people would how you react in that situation. Early morning weekend tee time, and the person you're with is like, "Hey, this is my first time ever stepping foot on a golf course."
Yeah, those people would get run off my golf course at 2 hours and 40 minutes on the front. That's crazy talk. Speaking of which, we need to start. A forum discussion on your random partner story that I think you'd probably lead the charge on those moments. I would love to follow that. I do have a question that actually stems from something I've written down. So we're kind of killing it at this point from a intended topics perspective.
I like it.
Yeah. It's very exciting. You play a variety of courses and yes. You also play as a single. What threshold do you need to hit in order to go in that pro shop afterwards and purchase something from your round? Sort of commemorate the moment.
Yeah. You know what? I'm not the biggest pro shop guy. I buy stuff from like special courses, but there's no course around like in my general area that I've played that I'm like, oh man, I need to put something in the bag. I need to get a ball mark or anything. I usually don't. I usually grab a scorecard. I like to save the scorecards from all the places I've played at. They're in a box somewhere in this place. You know, I cherish them, obviously. But, you know, there's some like the a couple of times I went down and played Leatherstocking Golf Club, which is just outside the Baseball Hall of Fame. That's a cool course. I went down there and played a couple times. I bought stuff from that pro shop, and more just because it's like an hour and a half away, but it's not a course that I frequently go do. So that was one. Outside of that, usually I buy stuff just from like special courses.
Okay.
Even when I was a member at a course, I didn't buy any of the memorabilia from said course.
Have you ever gone to a course that you really loved, but you were completely and utterly underwhelmed by the course logo and the execution of that logo on the apparel?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not as much on apparel. Cause if I buy something, it's usually more practical ball marker. Cause I'm a slob.
Maybe a hat. Yeah, I get it.
Ball marker, hat, maybe a cup.
I mean, I think that's a good example, though, because you're stuck with this marker with the logo on it. And it's like, I love the golf course. I hate the logo.
Yeah, just I've definitely, you know, it's I like the logo at Hidden Creek a lot.
Mm-hmm.
The last time I was there, they had a ball. They had like one ball marker. And I was just like, yeah, you know what? I don't think that one looks that one's not for me. So I didn't buy it.
Okay.
But it's not because the logo, it was just the whole design of the ball marker. I just didn't really jive for me.
Interesting. Yeah, that's it surprised me. I went up and I don't want to gaslight the course, but my expectations were to definitely purchase something to commemorate the round. It's a well-known golf course. And when I saw the way the logos looked on the shirts, I was like, man, that is really advertising. I'm like, may as well walk around with the golden arches halfway across my chest. Like it was a lot. And
Malbon shirt?
No. And I was just kind of disappointed about it. I got Cal a really cool ball marker. But it just really surprised me because I think the only other time I've experienced that is when I play like a TPC, because all you get is the TPC logo with the name scrolled underneath it. It's like,
yep.
I mean, you buy one from one of them, then you have pretty much all of them. You can just sew in your own name if you feel like it.
Yeah. I have one of the towels, the caddy towels from TPC Myrtle Beach. Same thing. Yeah. You just take Myrtle Beach out and put Sawgrass under it.
Yeah. Las Vegas. Add another $2 to the overall value of it. I never thought I'd be that guy, man, but you know, we've been lucky enough to go to a couple Dormy properties over the last couple of years. And I think they've done great work executing their logos, which I feel like you sort of adapted to this. Well, now that it's got to be a cool logo, otherwise I'm not going to rock it at this right. point. And I just never thought I'd be that guy. I thought the visual of the course would be enough to just be like, that's what I should do. And that's what I should get. Man, it definitely didn't work that way this time. I was surprised by it.
It's a little bit of a bummer too, because if you go to a spot that you really want to grab something, and now that you mention it, there is a course I know that I've been to that I was hoping to buy something and I bought a towel.
Okay.
because of the logo.
The blank towel,
yeah, pretty much.
Dean, you don't have to pay for those. They're on the cart. You're not supposed to take them home with you.
Oh. Well, I got like 7 of those. So they smell like mango.
Yeah, I'll bet they do. Yeah. Yeah, what a weird thing. I know we're sort of jumping around a little bit, but I can't get over the 708 tee time story. And there was a different discussion I had not too long ago of a show that you guys will have heard when this goes live. It talked about how sort of understanding the rules of golf, there's not really anything like an education piece. You book a tee time and you go play. And it's unlike a lot of other sports where I guess you can go take tennis rackets to a tennis court and figure it out, ideally with tennis balls. But the example that was used was something like skiing. Like if you go to a ski hill for the first time, you're probably going to go through a class. You're probably going to go to like the easiest hill and sort of work your way over there. Golf is remarkably specific in the expectations that people should have when they go to a, let's call it an average golf course with average expectations. Does it surprise you that courses don't do more to educate people who come off the street and play?
I've always thought there should be something. I just don't know how you implement it.
Like driver's ed for golfers.
Like driver's ed for golfers.
Golfer's ed.
How many times do you get behind somebody that's in driver's ed, like behind the golf cart, and you're like, well, player A is over here, player B ball over here, drive over, wait for this guy to hit, pick him up, drive back over the 25, 30 feet over here to this ball. And then, you know, drop the guy off, go back. There should be ways to teach people to it, not only just pace of play, but just get around the golf course. You do not have to be a good golfer to know how to get around the golf course efficiently. You can be a terrible golfer and get around the golf course. I'm exhibit A.
Come on, settle down.
That's true. I don't know how to get around.
So you mentioned something about like, is it my turn to play? Like questions like that from an extreme novice. But how often do you encounter people who just don't really align with the standard etiquette? So like talking when you're trying to hit, or stepping in your line when you're putting, or moving around like on the other side of your putting line when you're trying to line it up. Like, do you encounter that a lot as a single?
More the people that are talking during the backswing, because they're, in fairness, most of the time I'm paired up with two or three people that are going together, you know, on the third or fourth wheel here. So they're talking about their lives and they know how to play, and I'm, you know, the visitor for the day, not so much walking in my line during putting or anything like that. It's mostly the big thing is just the talking and backswing, which actually does not bother me. As long as you're talking before, like, I start my swing, I don't really care. It's, you know, the old,
really?
Like, it's like the old Seve story of, you know, starting to cough while people were in their backswings during the Ryder Cup and stuff like that. But if somebody is having a conversation while I walk to the tee, I'm perfectly okay with it. I can hit and go. They don't need to stop and be quiet. If I'm getting ready to hit and I start to take my club back and you're just like, man, how about we get a burger after the round? Like, in the middle of the swing. Like, that's going to bother me.
Okay, so hear me out, Dean, because we've hung out a lot over our friendship, and I feel like you're the kind of person where you'd be more focused on what they're saying in their conversation than your actual golf swing. So that's the issue I have. If you're talking about something I don't care about, I'm fine. I can play through that. The second I'm interested in the things you're saying, like, suddenly I'm like right up here, I'm like, oh, I can contribute to this.
So if I'm talking about baseball cards as you're getting ready to hit all of a sudden,
man, you start talking about Toronto's nice little series win against the extremely talented Colorado Rockies. Yeah, I would definitely start to engage in conversation. I always laugh because every once in a while my guys will get me with it and I'll hit a stinky shot and I'll just look over like, huh, I am definitely interested in discussing that more with you. And the worst is when you can sort of hear it and then they quiet down, but you're already invested in hearing what they have to say. So you like, I've looked back before. I'm like, finish your thought. I want to hear too.
The worst used to be like playing, not that my dad was, you know, like Earl Woods, but playing with my dad and the guys in his group, you know, they play golf every day. So they don't take it too serious. They don't really care about anything else that's going on. If they want to talk, they're just going to talk. Or my dad, who is like, for my entire life, has always had like change in his pocket, and
yes,
like nervous things is always just rattling the change in his pocket. So those are the things that just by playing in that environment for so long, you just kind of get used to. Like, I expect somebody to just blurt something out or change to be rattling in the middle of my swing. If, as long as it's happening while I like put the tee in the ground, I'm perfectly fine. So it's not gonna bother
as long as it's consistent.
Yeah.
What about music? Very specific types of music. Does that ever get you off your game?
No.
So I don't listen to country, but we were playing in something and my buddy had like this just crazy twangy country singer on, and it's not bad music. I don't have a problem with it, but I started laughing because it was so twangy. I was like, are they doing that as a joke? And I'm like trying to concentrate on my swing, but I'm like giggling at this music. Does that, like, nothing like that ever?
The only time, and I can't necessarily say the lyrics on the show, the only time that's ever happened, we were playing a round of golf in South Carolina with our old friend, Jason Koontz, and he was blasting, rap and hip hop music.
Yeah.
And went to go hit a wedge shot, and the lyric came up, and the lyric was just like, but, they weren't saying, but, you know, I was like, Jake, what the heck are we listening to? I thought it was like a record that was just skipping, but it was so funny. That's only time that like sticks in my head that I was just like, man, I don't know if I can do this.
Yeah. It's funny how we get so wrapped up in these other things. But then at the same time, like clapping or celebrating or loud noises, when it's all being droned out, if it's all consistent, then I mean, what difference does it make? It's just consistent noise. You can easily play through that. But I will make another comparison to it is when I had the privilege of playing Brickyard, which is in Indy inside a and part of the golf course is built into the track, and they were running that day. So I'm playing lights out before we get inside the track, and then we get in there and the noise coming off these cars, it was so loud that I like forgot how to play golf for three holes. And I loved it because it was so different, but it just totally torqued my game completely off.
You needed your headphones.
Yeah.
Like the
these
ones
big
that,
old
the,
cans.
The,
yeah.
The ones that people wear to like mow their lawn. Like
super cool, but I was blown away at the kind of noise it was making and that it would actually, maybe I just had three bad holes, like you said.
I grew up playing at a course that, and I've shared some pictures of it before. Like one of the holes you have to hit across the road. Yeah, on a par four. And then, you know, there's a par three that's right next to the road that everybody likes to like honk their horns. They're teeing off. And then at the top of the hill going the other way is a par five. And there's a train tracks next to that.
Jesus.
So, you know, getting those kind of noises, it's just like, yeah, all right, you get used to it. The horns, when they're in the middle of the tee shot, that's cruel.
That's mean. We call them Loveland's finest here in Cincinnati.
It's very
bunch
mean.
Of jerks.
Oh, so I don't God. Feel bad when I hit a car.
Well, since we're talking about nonsense, golf nonsense, I feel like we should at least discuss Happy Gilmore 2. I'm sure you've seen it at this point.
Oh, yeah, multiple times. Yeah. It deserved a rewatch. It was that
really
good. Yeah.
There's a lot of debate. What about it was repeatable for you?
I thought that movie, first off, going into it, I did not expect it to be like a masterpiece of a movie. It's an Adam Sandler comedy. So the expectations are already low. I thought it hit the right spots for like the nostalgia factor. I thought all the cameos were really kind of funny. I thought the PGA pros that they put in it were pretty funny. I was a little upset that, spoiler alert, what happens to Julie Bowen in the first like 10 minutes of the movie. that kind of hurt my feelings a bit.
Yeah. Yeah.
But you know, I gave it a rewatch because I wanted to see if there were cameos that maybe I missed or, any kind of joke or line. You know me, I like to quote movies a lot. So any line that I may have missed, I enjoyed it. I watched it. I've seen it twice. Like I said, it hit the right spots for me.
Yeah, some people are saying it's like 200 TikToks all meshed together and made into a movie, which is pretty funny.
Yeah, it really is. And the first half of the movie I thought was really like kind of decent. The second half of the movie, once they, you know, went
full Maxi.
Went full Maxi Live Golf. It was just it got a little off the rails, but I still enjoyed it.
I can't remember who I was debating, but me and the boys quoted it all weekend, and we are still quoting it, having only watched it personally once. But I really couldn't decide who they were ripping more on, because obviously the Live thing, but then you've got the TGL thing, but then like the holes they included for the competition at the end were more akin to like Holy Moly, that is it the Steph Curry thing with the putting? You know what I'm talking about?
Yep.
And it's like, it was so off-putting that the more I think about it, the more I want to see it again, just to get pissed off again, watching nonsense, you know?
I kind of want to play a hole with the green where somebody stands on it.
Yeah.
And shifts around. That'd be kind of wild.
Oh man. Yeah. What a weird finish. I thought the cameos and the on PGA tour stuff were incredibly well done. I think you run the risk of ruining a cult classic in a lot of ways by reintroducing the idea and going in a different direction. I thought he did a wonderful job with it, and especially the character he got out of some of the guys from tour. I mean, so strong.
So good. Scottie Scheffler was so good. It's arguably the best that he's ever been.
I cannot believe how much he leaned into all the bullshit that's happened to him. That was great.
He was running jail cell. He punches the guy in the face. He's like, all right, I know the drill. Puts his hands down.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Do you put it in a top three or top five golf movie for you? Well, hold on. Let me back it up.
Oh no.
Is Happy Gilmore in your top three golf movies? You look like a Caddyshack guy.
Caddyshack, I know, is not aged well, but I've always liked Caddyshack.
We know. We expected that.
You should expect that one. Greatest Game Ever Played. That's up there.
Okay. I really appreciate you saying that. Shia LaBeouf, really
I really like that one.
That's a great call.
Trying to think what else. You got
Bagger Vance. You got
Bagger Vance.
Tin Cup.
Bagger Vance is probably a better movie than Happy Gilmore, but I'd rather watch Happy Gilmore.
Okay. Because Matt Damon.
Yeah, I got Matt Damon.
It's amazing how many bad golf movies there have been. And didn't Shooter have something he did not too long ago? Was he like a cameo in something? I can't remember. It was Shooter. Yeah, it's I don't know. Yeah. So is Happy Gilmore in your top three? Let's say top five.
Yeah, it probably gets it. If it does, it's probably in that four or five spot.
Okay. Where does Happy Gilmore 2 sit then?
Lower than that. Maybe like seven.
Seven. Okay.
I got to think of all the other golf movies.
It's between at least two other movies you haven't thought of yet, is what you're saying.
Yeah. I want to make sure there's room.
God, I feel like that is not a good representation of what you've enjoyed so far. Maybe what you need to do is wait a year, then watch it.
It was
more
better
times.
Than Caddyshack 2. I'll say that.
Anything's better than Caddyshack 2. Going to the 7:08 tee time and playing in 5.5 hours is better than Caddyshack 2.
Yeah. Yeah.
Before we wrap up, I've got to know, man, where are we at on tour golf? And I assume you're getting super fired up for the Ryder Cup, being that it's sort of local this year.
Yeah, it is. It's down in Long Island. First major venue I ever went to was the 2002 U.S. Open. So I'm excited to see it back at Bethpage. You know, at the time of this airing, we're already 1 week into the FedEx Cup. So guys are still battling it out for the team. I don't know. I really don't have a read yet on where the heck this thing is going to go, because Keegan Bradley, he still could be picked by himself for this team, I guess. I mean, you know, Cam Young just getting a recent victory. Does that, you know, he's a New York guy. His father's a PGA pro from Sleepy Hollow, I believe, which is probably about an hour from Bethpage. So he would be an interesting person to get there. And he was on the President's Cup team, I believe, last year. So he's got team experience. I don't know where they're going to go for some of these picks. Who was the guy that was hot going into the Open Championship? Gotterup?
Oh, Scotty Scheffler.
He's pretty good. He might make the team.
Yeah, Gotterup was up there for quite a while.
He wins the Scottish Open. He plays well at the Open Championship. He's making some late noise. You've always kind of talked about, you know, you want to pick a hot guy, hot playing guy, not just, you know, hot looks. Doesn't hurt for the posters, but, you know, the hot golfer going into these things, you know, the Billy Horschel rule.
Yeah, I'm curious about that from your perspective. If you were building a team and you had the choice of more wins or more wins recently on the year, what do you take? Or should I say better finishes, because wins are hard to come by.
I think it depends on what you already have locked in there. But I mean, theoretically, the people that's already locked in those top six spots have earned it and whatnot.
Right.
So I think I'd rather go with the hot guy. So, you know, when you think of somebody like Colin Morikawa is a guy to talk about. And I know THP loves to talk about him. So,
yeah,
you know, he hasn't been racking up wins. He had some good finishes earlier this year. He had some good finishes last year. He hasn't been great lately. You know, he's been divorcing caddies left and right.
Say, you're only allowed one caddy.
Yeah.
Is that per round or per tournament?
Per gotta be per round, right? Per tournament, per month. Should be per year. What happened to these guys that just keep their caddies for, you know, decades, and then they're just like, all right, you know what, we're gonna move in a different direction.
Social media mostly.
I digress. But he's a guy that is an interesting case because he's up there. I want to say he's like somewhere in that like 6 through 8 spot right now in the standings. But he hasn't been on top of his game for a little bit. Would you rather have somebody who's coming in and maybe like a Brian Harman who's finding some form again? I know, you know, Keegan Bradley's gotten some high finishes and gotten a more recent win. Patrick Cantlay. Would you be more interested in Patrick Cantlay than Colin Morikawa? I know right there you're talking about which devil you want.
Yeah. Well, that's the interesting point. Like, do you want the guy who's going to make the putt or the guy who you can actually tolerate in the locker room?
Yeah. I mean, I want the guy who's going to wear the hat. Maybe it'll be him because they're going to get paid this time.
Yeah. Well, you'd hate to lose out on a tan. So
I think it really depends on, what you have on the team so far. Their team is going to be kind of questionable, I think. You know, they're going to have some young blood in there. Keegan Bradley's already said that DeChambeau is going to be on the team, which I'm totally in favor of. Bring him on. Let's go.
Well, bring on the interest with him too.
Absolutely. And he'll get that crowd going. You know, the Ryder Cup crowds are always so amped up and over the top as it is. He's a guy that just gets things riled up even more.
Yeah. No.
Why wouldn't you want him there?
Yeah, maybe bring Phil back. Who cares?
Yeah, let's not get crazy.
Do you have like an overall perspective on who's going to win this thing? Do you think USA's got a good chance?
I think USA's got a chance. You got a chance. It's New York. It's not going to be easy.
Oh yeah, that's a good point.
It's New York. The thing that worries me about this Ryder Cup is, if you remember, not Whistling Straits, but I think it was at Hazeltine. You know, the European team was really up in arms about how they were treated up at Hazeltine.
Where was that? Where's Hazeltine?
Minnesota?
Is it? Okay. Was there one? Did they play one in Chicago?
Yes, Medina.
That's the one I was thinking about. It got pretty rowdy there too.
Yeah. So they've been not treated well, but if they weren't treated well in Minnesota, where they're a lot nicer than New Yorkers.
Generally polite.
Yes. They're going to be in Long Island in New York, and it's going to be raucous crowds. I think it's going to be tough for them to get over some of that.
Yeah. How many party holes do you think they'll have at the Ryder Cup?
19.
Oh man. It is always such an adventure with you on the show. You know that?
It's something.
I think we got at least 3 conversational bits checked off this week.
Impressive.
That's pretty good.
And I surprised you with one. How about that?
And you still don't have a new car.
I still don't have a new car. It's sad.
Oh man.
Someday.
Any parting thoughts, Dino?
No, I've got nothing. I have no parting thoughts. So I want to circle back really quick.
Oh boy.
One thing you talked about. So what are we doing with this mini driver?
Oh, what are we doing? I feel like
are we putting one in the bag?
Well, I mean, I'd show you the blisters on my hand from the number of range sessions I've not resolved the driver with. For a guy who's spent the better part of, I think, 4 years leaning on a 1-iron, you'd think I would have explored all options at this point, and somehow the mini kind of got skipped. I do think it's time to at least explore it. And if for nothing else, to convince myself that it's not a driver so I can just swing like a normal person for a while, that might be all that I need to like kickstart the grooving the driver swing again concept, right? But the question is which one? They all have sort of their own identity. I've seen the depth of the Callaway Elite looking a little bit different than, let's say, the depth of the GT280 from Titleist. And
yeah, very different.
TaylorMade's got a couple different versions of. And I mean, there are definitely options. It's kind of like, where do I land? What do you think? What do you think I should do?
It's kind of funny to see how many mini driver options are out there.
Yeah, it's like mini adjacent, right?
Yeah, it really is. Where do I think for you?
Yeah.
I think you would probably like the look of the Titleist the best.
I bet you're right. Yeah, I was looking at it. I think I hit a proto at one point and hit some really nice shots and then begrudgingly handed it back to its rightful owner, which was disappointing. But yeah, I think that that's got a real good shot. And the new T-Series irons are insane. So, you know, pairing that up is probably not the worst plan.
No, I mean, that'd be fine, right?
I'll think about it, Dean.
Oh, yeah, there you go.
We'll get them booked. We'll have to have this discussion later.
We'll get you a mini driver before we get me a new vehicle.
Yeah, that is too much truth in that. Thanks for coming on, buddy. I appreciate
Absolutely, bud.
Hey, if you guys are playing golf this weekend, have fun. I would strongly recommend the 7 o'clock tee time, not the 7:08, especially if you're somewhere in New York. It turns out it's a great time for new golfers to try it out for themselves. Yeah, if you are playing golf this weekend, have fun. Make it count. And as we discussed last episode, find your golf euphoria. I really like that. I think we need to land there. Hit that one shot that makes you come back. We'll see you guys next week. Now it's time to send it over to Don Brown for this week's Shaft Education, brought to you by True Temper.
Hey everybody, Don Brown from True Temper, back here in Shaft University answering another question. This week's question is about Evenflow, a very popular line of shafts we had several years ago from Project X, and if that's going to come back. One of you guys has said that's your favorite shaft ever, and you miss it. While our new product line is not an exact replacement for Evenflow, the Denali product's built on a similar idea. That is, it's built for more smoother tempos. We've always had our hazardous line for the aggressive guys. Evenflow is for smoother tempos. Our Denali shafts like that as well, with a few added material technologies into it. Hope that answers your question. Talk to you guys next time.
THP Radio on the Hackers Paradise Podcast Network, your number one source for all things golf. Subscribe on iTunes to never miss an episode.